Yo.
Hey there, Larry. How's it going?
It's good. It's Friday.
I've heard. It's Friday indeed.
I know. I'm excited. About to go run 2.23 miles.
Yeah.
In support of I Run with Ahmad.
I'm going to do it too.
Well, after we record this podcast, of course.
But that's sure.
My plans for the day. I'm excited to kind of just show solidarity with everybody else. And it's been cool to see other people do it too.
It has. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and this is not a flex, but I have been a runner for several years now. And it's sometimes it's a really thankless sport. There's a reason why a lot of people don't like running. I love it, but you really only get the runner's high a fraction of the time. And sometimes you're out for a run and it just plain sucks and it's hard and everything is annoying you and it's too hot and your stomach hurts and whatever. And I don't know, I guess recently, I think I was kind of wondering to myself, like, well, why do I even do this? You know, what is it that is even that valuable about it to me? Especially, you know, the older I get, the harder it gets on your joints and everything. And I used to kind of feel glimpses of this notion of like, you run because you're sort of celebrating the fact that you can, and there's a humbleness to it. And, you know, so many people are unable to for reasons of that are, you know, physical limitations or societal ones that are just forcing people's hands and not letting them be so free with their bodies. And I'm really thinking about that a lot today. Just the fact that it's such a beautiful expression to be able to just move so freely through the world at whatever pace you want and go wherever your feet can take you. And it doesn't cost any money. And I think it's really beautiful that it's unifying so many people right now in this memoriam for Ahmad, but it's also just obviously so freaking tragic that it has to come to that.
Yeah. I can say, like, from my office window looking out at the street, tons of people have been running today outside in my neighborhood, which is a great feeling. It's good.
Totally.
To know.
I agree.
So you're gonna weekend plans?
Well, besides the runs, which it's finally getting really hot here in Seattle. The high is like 82 this weekend, which is pretty dang hot. So today's 2.23 should be okay, but Sunday's, you know, 5 or 6 might hurt a lot in the heat. But beyond that, I'm going to do another super basic quarantine thing, which is start a garden. And I've never started a garden before. And I mean, I have some indoor plants that have lived for a couple years, so I think I've demonstrated that I can keep plants alive, but I'm taking all the tips I can get. And Larry's got, you've got quite a green thumb. So
yeah, we talked about my tomatoes last time, but like, are you thinking about doing this inside in a windowsill or outside, like somewhere in your apartment?
It will be outside. I've got a great patch of sun and have it's basically
on your balcony.
No, I don't have a balcony, and my apartment building is extremely strict about not letting you have anything. Like, you can't have a window planter, you can't have an AC that hangs out the window. But okay. My boyfriend lives in a house that he lives in alone. I live alone. In case anybody's wondering, you know, we are the only people that either of us spends any time with. So quarantine wise, even though we aren't cohabitating constantly together, I promise we're very rigid about the rules. Anyway, he has a yard. He built me this planter box that's like, well, it's not a box, it's a converted table. So I've got a good spot for it and a lot of sunlight. And it's a mercifully outdoor thing that I'm able to do that keeps me from being stuck in my studio apartment.
Nice. Vitamin D in your future.
Yeah, bad sunburn in my future, if we're being honest.
Well, speaking of running and being outdoors, we're going to talk to someone, a good friend of ours, Darren Griffin, local or advisory board member, writer at large. You've read his work on Nike Jordan blog. He's written for Nice Kicks, Slam, High Snobiety, fashion writer, and avid runner in Austin. So let's give him a call.
Let's do it. Hey, Darren.
What's up?
How's it going?
good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good. You hanging out somewhere in Austin right now?
Hanging out in my living room.
Cool.
Which is, for me, the safest place in town.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
So that's where I'm at.
That's good. I hope you have a good setup there.
How's the quarantine been going for you?
Not bad. You know, like up until just the end of last year, I worked remote for about 8 years. So I worked from home a lot. You know, there are coffee shop days and stuff like that, but for the most part, I'm always at home. So I hate to sound a little bit unaffected, for lack of a better word, but, you know, being at home is not foreign to me.
You're a pro to the choir. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been doing anything to kind of like break up your day, go on runs or whatnot?
I do go on runs quite a bit. I usually try and run just about every day, you know, and I'll break up, you know, longer runs on the weekends or close to the weekends and shorter runs during the week in the morning before, you know, I log on and get to work. I sew a lot. So
you sew?
Yeah.
What do you sew?
You know, I just tend to mess around with things. I can sew scarves. I can do ties. I can, like, you know, kind of take apart like something like maybe my jeans and kind of tailor and make them slimmer or make the leg opening wider. Just like small things. I can't like just make a shirt from scratch or anything.
But I feel like I've known you for so long, and like this is a little wrinkle that I had no idea about. Like I knew you were deep in the fashion game. For sure. But like, I didn't know you were doing your own alterations and stuff. That's fire.
Well, you know, I have, and this is going to sound like mad bougie, but I have a tailor, but obviously I can't go to her right now. So I've always been able to sew decent. So now the things that I used to take to my tailor, Jenny, I'll try and do at home without like tearing up my nice things that I love.
So what are you like even tailoring at this time? I mean, because like everyone's like so athleisure focused at the moment. Like, are you still getting fits off during quarantine? Like, are you like me, just shorts and sweatshirt every day?
I'm definitely not getting any fits off, unfortunately. This is just like a sad fit era right now.
That's what they'll call it in the textbooks years and years from now.
The fit depression. But
yeah.
But really no, is. I'm just like, you know, in my downtime when I'm not working or writing and I'm just kind of bored, I'll just go into the closet and find things that like don't quite fit perfect and see if with the skill set that I have, which is rather minimal, I can do something with.
That's a really good thing to maybe like, that's a good quarantine hobby suggestion for something, you know, like what am I going to come out of this having mastered? Well, for most of us, probably nothing, but a good ambition or endeavor might be becoming your own tailor.
Yeah. It's a productive way to elevate the closet without
breaking the bank.
Yeah. That's tight.
Yeah, man. And the thing about it too, is just for me personally, you know, I always try and work on, you know, being more patient, because I am not a patient person just in general. And if you've ever used a sewing machine, it's a very, very tedious thing. It's, you know, it's feel and touch. And the way you push your foot on the lever has to be very gentle. It's like learning how to drive a clutch. Mm-hmm. So it requires a lot.
At my first job, I worked on an industrial sewing machine.
Oh, man.
And I was sewing like billboards and things like that.
Like you were vinyl. Sewing billboards?
Well, like billboards in large format signage, like it would be like printed on vinyl and you'd have to like make a loop, like so that you could run dowels through things.
Whoa.
So this vinyl is like really thick and you'd have to use like these like World War II era sewing machines with like nylon threads to like, so, you know, make sure everything was done. Cause like a normal sewing machine couldn't go through that material.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's something I've never even thought of.
The time it took to learn how to use one of those things. Oh my God. Like weeks, like The first, like probably 100 I did were like so janky. Can't believe a client like still accepted them. They were that bad, you know.
Did you ever see them, you know, posted around town?
Yeah, you would. Okay. Yeah.
There's my janky sign.
Yeah. Oh, that one looks like my handiwork.
Wow. I didn't know we were sewing bros. That's pretty
so
cool.
Charming. I have a tailor too. And
wow, flex.
Well, I'm short. I'm little. So it's like I feel like I have to factor in the cost of tailoring something when I buy it sometimes. Like, you know, t-shirts, jeans are fine, but like if I get a jacket, it's not going to look the way I want it to look unless the sleeves are the length that I want them to be. And they're never the length that I want them to be. But the problem with my tailor, she's really talented, but she always confuses me with somebody else who is like way further along success-wise in life than I am. And so she always is asking me these questions. Like it happens every time I go in there. And then she sort of apologizes, but she's like, how's your husband? I'm like, I'm not married. She's like, oh, but you've got a boyfriend, right? I'm like, I actually don't. Thank you. Wow. Or like talking to me about the kids and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, so
she's
I don't
like
know.
Inadvertently taking you down.
She always does. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. So. But I'm the same way actually, you know, just my build, I have to factor in the cost of tailoring when I buy things.
Mm-hmm. But it's so worth it because that really makes the difference between trying to pull something off and actually doing it. And I'm not ashamed to admit that that's a lesson that I learned at a pretty young age from the Olsen twins.
Well, speaking of clothes that fit well, Darren, I was watching TV and, you know, just minding my own business. And this commercial comes on about masculinity. And there you are in the middle of it. Just like dropping bars. I'm like, what? How did D end up on TV?
Yes, please explain this to us.
Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, you know, the funny thing is when that commercial was airing a lot, most of the time it was on Hulu. And I didn't have Hulu at the time. So everybody was texting me and calling me saying they're seeing me on this commercial. And I hadn't even seen it yet, personally. Which is super trash.
No. But that's like the cool thing to say. Like, oh, yeah, I haven't actually checked it out yet. So
I mean, the uncool thing to do would to be like blowing up the PR person's email, being like, "Yo, when's the director's cut come out? I want that." You know. So.
Well, it's it came about just Bonobos, this menswear retailer, was doing a new ad campaign about masculinity and how that's been redefined over the years and how it continues to be redefined, and they were starting in two select markets in Austin and in Chicago. So I guess they got my name, word of mouth, a reference or something from a friend that I was I'm using air quotes, a progressive guy. And, so they reached out to me and they told me a little bit about it and I thought it was great, you know, so I was into it. And, we went out to Los Angeles to shoot the commercial, on a film lot, which one it was, I couldn't tell you. But it was cool. It was like tons of people there and they were kind of like, you know, all across the spectrum, gay guys, straight guys, trans guys, young, old, short, tall. Like, so, you know, along with the theme of like, you know, your masculinity isn't necessarily defined by who your parents are, how you look or what your sexual orientation is. So I thought that was great. And I thought it was a cool campaign to be a part of.
I like that how low key it was like tearing down like the MAGA version of what masculinity like used to be, you know? And, you know, I'm sure they weren't trying to like super politicize, but like it definitely gave me hope for what we can be as men moving forward and not be toxic men.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a long lesson that, you know, men have to learn. And I'm sure, you know, Larry can attest to this because we, in a lot of cases, were raised a certain way and our dads and our uncles and our grandparents were a certain way and not to any fault of their own. They were just, you know, prehistoric, if that's a good way to put it.
Listen, this is nothing against you. It's just that you are part of a classification that is now literally extinct.
Right. And you're an actual dinosaur. Uh-huh. I don't know why you're still here, but you are. So yeah, that was what, you know, drew me to the project the most, I think, was to be able to kind of help change that narrative of, you know, who men are and who we need to be and the things that we need to shake to move forward.
Did you walk away with like product? Did they seed you?
They did. So I got a couple of things. I wanted a suit. I didn't get a suit.
Damn, Bonobos, come on.
I know, man. I wanted a suit so I could take it right to Jenny, take it to my tailor and get fitted up. But no, they were really cool. They're really nice. They took care of us and they gave us, you know, essentially, you know, what we wanted off the rack from the fitting sessions. So what we wore in the commercial and then what our alternative outfits wore, we got to take those too. So it was really cool.
That's generous.
Well, and also good news. This episode of Staycation, the podcast, is actually brought to you by Bonobos. So they want us to be really well clad, despite the fact that this is an entirely audio medium. So they're hooking us all up with suits. Wow. Just so we can, you know, look our best from the comfort of our own homes.
Damn, this is the start of the fit boom.
Yeah, right, this here is a really good time for you to be joining us. Hey, yeah. I have a question for both of you, just before we lose the thread of toxic masculinity. That was also a Taylor joke right there, losing the thread. tell me about the last time y'all cried.
I don't cry a ton, but I did cry recently. Within the past week, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later, there's obviously something that happened in the news with a particular runner who was gunned down, just running, just a black man running, going out mm-hmm. for a jog. And I know we'll probably get into this a little bit later.
Yeah, let's definitely get
but
into it.
Yeah, I run outside every day. So, you know, in a very white predominant city. So it hit home for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's heavy stuff.
Dang. Well, I do. I want to get it. I would definitely want to get into this. This is definitely on my show notes. So I'll be real quick with mine. Joa and Kate and I were having a happy hour yesterday, and we were talking about like a few moments. It was sort of related to this, but the few moments in time as an Asian male, son of immigrants, like I can count on my hands, like the last few times I felt joy or like complete weightlessness and not felt like I was excluded from someone's gaze or anything like that. And the one time was like when Atlanta United won a soccer game, because like everyone was focused on the team and the city that day. Mm-hmm. So it felt different. And then the time previous to that was before Kanye went crazy. And I was actually at one of his shows, and it really felt inclusive as hell. Like everyone there was there to like, everyone gave each other space to like enjoy the concert. Everyone was wearing crazy stuff. Every, you know, like you said, young, old, rich, poor, black, white, Asian, Latin, like everyone was there to have a good time. And I was like, man, this is like the world I want to live in. It's amazing. So I teared up a little then, but then my vision of that has definitely been tainted, or my memory of that has been tainted by recent Kanye events.
What album was that show for?
Pablo.
Okay.
This was first leg of the tour, because towards the second leg of that tour was when he started like mm-hmm. kind of losing it.
Yeah.
Storming off stage and stuff. So this was like, I think the Atlanta show was like halfway through leg one. So, but that was that. But like, let's definitely go into this running thing. Let's talk about that.
You're talking about it now?
Yeah. Are you going to run 2.23 miles today for Ahmad?
I am. Along with a couple of friends, Joa being one of them, a little bit later this afternoon, we're going to go run a couple of miles in his honor. And the original plan was to get 26 people together to celebrate his 26th birthday, which is today. And I think we may end up having just like right around that number, maybe even a few more. But we're going to just like have this socially distancing run through Clarksville here in Austin, Texas, which is historically where the first freedmen, the first post-Civil War blacks in Austin settled. So it has that historical reference and presence in Austin as being that place that's very black-centric, even though it doesn't look like that today. But that's why we chose that neighborhood to run through.
That's a great reason.
That's awesome. So meaningful.
Yeah.
Hilly, but, too.
It is, yeah. So it's gonna be a hard 2.3. It's not gonna be easy.
That's cool. I plan on doing it too. It was raining this morning, so I didn't go. But like after we record here, I'm gonna go blast these miles.
Yeah, same for sure. I think that's really wonderful that obviously horrible circumstances, and I don't mean to sugarcoat any of that, but it does feel like a very tangible way to show support and feel connected. That I haven't felt in other recent tragedies. There's a lot that happens that I sort of just feel helpless and stupid about, just really having no concept of what I can do to, you know, make any sort of an impact apart from donating, you know, $25 or whatever.
The easiest thing to do is just a rage tweet or retweet someone, you know, that has a good point to make about these things. But what's interesting here is, like, there's something productive I can do, like, for mm-hmm. myself, and I'll be thinking about it when I run. And then also, you know, the proof. And it's cool to see the community of, like, people posting Instagram stories or tweets or what of their, like, Nike Plus app or whatever. And it's just cool to see. It's like, I didn't think you were that woke, but, like, look at you.
Totally. You are. Yeah.
So, that in a way is, like, been cool to see.
It's one of those cases where, you know, it's a tragedy, but it brings about a way for, you know, someone's life, however short it was cut, to be, to give someone else's life a greater purpose. Uh-huh. You know, is like, again, I run every day. So does Joa. I know Kate's a runner. So it's not something that's going to leave you after today. You know, totally. It's something that when you run next week, next month, even next year, you know, it's always been, for me especially, a place of refuge, of freeness, of liberation, where it's my time to just be by myself and think and, you know, just kind of get away for a second. But it's always felt safe.
Yeah.
You know, no matter where I was running, if I was at home, if I was traveling, or, you know, something like that, it's always felt safe. It's always felt like something that, you know, when I leave my house and I lace up my shoes to go run, I'm going to come back home. Never doubted that. Never was a question in my mind that if I leave the house to go for a run, I'm not going to come back home.
Mm-hmm. But now there's a question.
So there's a question, and there's always going to be a thought of, you know, be grateful when you leave the house. Be grateful when you leave the house and come home, when your kids leave the house and come home, your parents, your friends. It's just not something to take for granted anymore, if you ever took it for granted to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
on a lighter question related to running, are you listening to music when you run usually?
Oh, absolutely. I'm one of those people where if I go out to run, like if I drive somewhere to Town Lake in Austin to run, and if I get my headphones, I'll just go home.
Oh, really?
It's I'll like just go that. Back home.
Well, do you plan on headphones to listening to music when you run your 2.3 today or not?
No. Even though, you know, we'll be spaced out pretty well, I think we're going to run in maybe 15 to 20 second intervals.
It'll just be nice to hear in the footsteps of people participating.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's so many people around. It's, of course, you want to feel connected. You know, I'll say one time, one of my fondest memories of Joa is he and I did the Big Sur marathon together. It was a lottery entry thing, and somehow we both got in and we were really excited. And side note, full disclosure, I had to downgrade to the 21-mile run because I had some awful shin splints that really affected my training. But we were like it's like 5:30 in the morning. We're waiting for this bus to pick us up to drive us like up the California coast from where we were staying to the starting line. And we were all standing around, and I realized, I was like patting my pockets looking for my headphones, and I realized that my boyfriend had driven away minutes before with my headphones in his car.
No.
And I was just like, I was just coming to terms with the fact that I was going to have to run farther than I've ever run before and Joa is like a running kind of purist for a lot of reasons and doesn't run with headphones often. Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me and he said, "Don't let the bus leave without me." And he sprinted back to his room and he came back with a pair of headphones. And that was the last time that I cried. It was 3 years ago. That was it. Damn. I'm just kidding. No, I'm totally joking. No, I cried this morning.
Oh, you didn't.
But, but music when you run is key. Yeah. I've never turned around and not run, Darren, but I can appreciate that it's a lot harder when you don't have them.
Darren, what are some secret tracks that you're running to, like closet embarrassing music that you wouldn't normally like admit to listening to?
I like America a lot.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
So I have an America playlist that I run to a lot. Uh-huh. I have a Steely Dan playlist that I run to a lot.
Okay.
I have an Incubus playlist, and Incubus isn't embarrassing. None of these bands really are, but it's not typical what you would think that I'm typical of yeah. what you would think that I'm listening to when I'm running.
Damn, you and Joa on the Incubus.
Incubus is phenomenal. That was one of the early bands, like late high school years for me, that got me into like alternative music. And I had never been before. It was like Incubus and the Chili Peppers. That Incubus was kind of like
the gateway to modern 90s
oh
alt.
Oh God.
That was my entry point to alternative music. It was like early in the morning, getting up, getting ready to go to basketball practice. It was on VH1.
But yeah. I also think a running playlist is no place to be like experimenting and really like pushing the envelope in terms of genres and what you like to listen to and what's hot, what's the next new thing. Like, no. You go back to the most basic stuff the most shameless stuff. I used to only run exclusively to the Arctic Monkeys. It was the only thing I could listen to when I ran. And I was deeply afraid that if I turned it off, that I would like, my legs would just stop working.
You just break down.
Yeah. But I only had two of their albums. So when it would, when I would go on like really long runs, it would start to, I'd have to let them repeat.
God. And you're over here making fun of me for liking Casey Musgraves. And here you are, Arctic Monkeys, both albums.
Let the record show. One, Arctic Monkeys have way more than two albums. So I was holding back. The superstition did not extend past those two albums. Those are the only two I trusted.
Darren, I know you write for a lot of esteemed publications. Like, have you ever written stuff and read comments on any of your things? And how do you deal with like haters?
I don't think that you do. You don't. I don't read comments much anymore. I think more so when I was early in my writing career and a little bit more insecure about my talent, mm-hmm. I would read those things because you would get confirmation that you're doing well sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of more of what you were looking for, as opposed to stumbling upon someone saying, you know, you got a fact wrong, or you know, your opinion isn't valid, or whatever the case may be. But now it's just not a thing. Don't read comments. I don't really give that any weight. The way I think about it is I don't need to be validated by, you know, anyone at this point. Mm-hmm. If you're a good writer, you're a bad writer, just, you know, understand where you are. And I try not to feed into any vanity, and I try not to let any insecurity take over. Just try and get better. And
yeah, I guess if the haters in the comments were, if they were any good, then maybe they'd be writing for Jordan Brand and not Darren Griffin.
So. That's right, Larry. You talk
about. Pick up any Jordans this year, anyway?
I bought the DMP 6s, which, you know, used to be like a mythical shoe for a very long time. And I always wanted those. I always wanted black 6s because I don't have the black infrared pair. So I bought those, and I like them a lot. They did a really good job. They came out well, but I think that's the only pair of Jordans that I've purchased this year.
It's post-quarantine plans. You're going to wear them?
Man, you know what? Just kind of, you know, knowing what I know about sneaker production, and I know they made a lot of pairs of those. I probably won't wear them for a long time. Yeah. Because I think everybody's hundreds of thousands of people are going to be wearing them. So I'm just going to leave them in the box.
Okay, but
take them out every once in a while and look at them. That's about it.
Talking about you not having any patience with you've got patience. Yeah, but I don't understand that kind of patience.
Well, the thing is, like, if you buy the new Jordans and you wear them immediately, everyone else is going to have them on, and you don't want to look like a clown like that. So that's kind of like, that's what my barometer was always like, oh, the new Jays are coming out, Saturday morning. Then if I go to the Hawks game on Saturday night, and if everyone else has them on, that means they're staying in my closet for another 2 years before I bust them out.
Is it like wearing,
that's the rule,
wearing the shirt that you bought at the concert to the concert?
It's sort of like that.
Yeah. But more expensive. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great comparison. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for edifying me. That makes sense, I guess.
But yeah, that's the thing. They're like making like 750,000 pairs of certain models these days. And like, I know that I'm an old head. So if I'm able to buy it on a Saturday now, that means there's tons of them. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have any bots. I don't have any like plugs at stores anymore. So if I'm able to get it, that means there's tons. And then that means like if they arrive, I unbox them, I look at them, and then they sit in the closet for years.
That's dedication.
Part of it. Yeah, I know. But I've been in the game so long. I don't have to flex my new Jordans like immediately. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's a slow burn. And y'all are talking about patience in a degree that I think I've literally never practiced. But anyway, so Darren, do you mind if we let's get into a couple of sort of localer centered questions that are hopefully up your alley also? We can start shoe based. Where do you like to buy shoes in Austin? And are you still able to do so right now with the shutdown?
I haven't bought any shoes locally in the past 2 months since the quarantine, but the places that I like to buy is a place called Sneaker Politics. It's downtown on 2nd Street District, and another place called Kickin' It, which is a little bit further north.
Shout out Colin.
Yeah, shout out Colin. Shout out Greg. And it's kind of it's a store that I know the owner. He used to manage another sneaker store called Nice Kicks. I used to write for them. And their very first sneaker store was in Austin. And he was the first manager of that store.
Is that the one on the drag?
Yes.
Great.
Guadalupe.
Yep. So, yeah, all three of those stores. But I haven't bought anything recently because I haven't gone out, even though I will say to those stores credit, they are doing curbside pickup and delivery. So it's pretty cool.
That's yeah, amazing. I saw that Colin was posting. I follow Kickin' It on Instagram, and Colin's a good friend. He used to be my plug if all the way from Atlanta. I'd be like, yo, Colin, I need these. And he'd be like, I got you. Just like send someone to come grab them. And so he was good. But I saw he was posting deliveries. Like if you want the new Jordans, like we'll drop them off at your house. And I was like, can you come to Atlanta? And he's like, nah, bro.
You pay for the gas, give me a place to stay.
Yeah.
So what about other establishments that you maybe you're missing, maybe you're still getting your fix of, is there any place that you are really loving the takeout for or the delivery? Are you doing any of that, or are you pinching pennies and cooking all your meals?
I am definitely cooking all my meals, but I am buying wine. Lolo Wine is this new organic wine bar that's on the east side of Austin on East 6th Street. And I pick up wine from there all the time. They have a great selection of like high skin contact orange wine, a lot of organic stuff, just like real fun, kind of funky things that I like. And like when Larry comes to town, we'll, you know, go to certain places like this other pizza place called Bufalina that also has a lot of organic wines. So yeah, I go there maybe once every 10 or so days, just buy a few bottles online and go pick them up.
Stock up.
That's handy.
Yeah.
I feel like I was really finally starting to sink my teeth into the, you know, whole funky, hazy skin, more skin contact orange wine scene before this started. But I don't feel like I have the confidence to shop for it under these circumstances. Like I can't just go into a store and know what I want or pick it up, figure it out online. So I've just been drinking boxed Sauvignon Blanc from Trader Joe's this whole time, and I'm missing that higher echelon of wine by a significant amount.
I think the fun part of high skin contact, like orange wine, is that, if you have a very broad palate like I do, you know, I'll buy things and just try them. I won't necessarily narrow myself down to I want this, this, and that. I'll just pick something that I haven't tried before. And they don't have a long shelf life. So once you open it, you usually have to drink it within the day or, you know, the next day. I just kind of take stock of what I like and what I don't. But I just kind of want to try everything because they're all very unique.
Part of my wine experience is going to the store and like having conversations with the people that work there. mm-hmm. and getting recs. Cause I trust their palate more than mine. I just tell them what I like. I like pet gnats and they recommend me some. And, that's kind of like eliminated in a way with, you know, COVID and all that. It's like, if I'm going to the liquor store, I want to be more intentional and there's like less curiosity and exploration and like one-to-one conversations. So my wine consumption has definitely like been way weaker, I would say. Like the quality of wines I'm drinking and the stuff I'm finding is just like whatever's right in front of me, I just grab it, you know, as opposed to like having a retail store experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, same.
So wine struggles, man.
Well, so, okay. So you're cooking a lot. What's your favorite thing to make for yourself?
I love grits.
Me too.
It's my favorite thing. I was a kid that when I got home from school in third or fourth grade, my brother would get a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some chips. My mom or my grandma, whoever was at the house when I got home, would make me a pot of grits. It was kind of weird, but that's what I liked.
You do sweet or savory?
Savory. I used to do sugar and stuff when I was younger. Now just, you know, salt and pepper, maybe a little bit of cheese. But yeah, if I have time and I'm going to make some grits, I'll probably make some grits, make some shrimp on the side. If I have some fish, I'll make grits and fish. That's kind of like my go-to, especially if I need protein, if I'm going to, you know, work out later, if I'm going to run. Let's see, lunch. I like to make soups a lot. So that's usually like my lunch and dinner thing. I like bean soup. So I'll make things with like chickpeas or white beans. And I'll just kind of use everything I have. I'll cut up peppers. I'll use kale. I'll use collard greens or mustard greens, lots of carrots. Yeah.
Are you a vegetarian?
No, but I was for a long time, but now I just eat poultry. So chicken and fish, but no red meat.
Cool. That's cool. That's exactly what I do too. Okay. So how about dinner besides soup? Had the soup box.
Dinner. What's my favorite? Or if I'm treating myself, what would I make for dinner? I'm a rice guy, so I'll usually make like rice or risotto and I'll just kind of get crazy with it. I'll make a dish and just kind of throw some of my favorite things in there. So it could be more veggies. I love fresh vegetables and everything. And I do a great baked chicken.
Well, I know you're like me, and I'm kind of a bean head. I love coffee. I can't get started on my work day like without a cup. So are you doing like going to the shop still and picking up, or are you making stuff at home and just kind of getting started with your day?
I'll just go buy some beans from a local spot like Figure Eight, mm-hmm. or Flat Track Coffee. And I'll just make it at home. Every once in a while, if I want to treat myself, I'll go to Joe's Coffee on South Congress and have like a nice turbo.
I was going to say that thing is dynamite.
I love that thing. Just get an extra shot in there and it's like rocket fuel. But non-quarantine, if I really want like the best iced coffee drink in town and I want something sweet.
I know what you're going to say.
Oh, you do? Because I've taken you there for it.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Elizabeth's.
Yes.
Elizabeth Street Cafe, is it Vietnamese iced coffee?
Yes, that is my favorite thing. No quarantine, just a regular Saturday, Sunday, at least one time over the course of the weekend, I'm going to go in there with a book, have that coffee, and just kind of hang out, chill, and enjoy that and read. It's like one of my favorite things to do.
Has work been pretty stable with the writing and all that, or how has COVID affected all that?
Thankfully, it has been pretty stable. You know, I feel kind of guilty saying that because I know it hasn't been stable for a lot of people. And I read somewhere today that the unemployment rate is as high as it's been since the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just...
This is a new Great Depression.
Yeah. But just, you know, by the grace of God, it's been good. And, you know, I took a full-time writing job back in October for the first time in almost a decade, and continue to do freelance work for Nike and for Jordan Brand, for flex. Some other local businesses. Small flex. But
gigantic flex. What are you talking about?
Well, I think the thing with the publishing industry is it's hit certain segments of that industry. And when you think about the segments that have been hit, it makes sense. So when you think about print and you think about certain online publications that have advertisers in the luxury space. So for instance, like Condé Nast with GQ or something like that, or Vanity Fair. And you know, you flip through that entire magazine and all the ads are Burberry and Gucci and Louis Vuitton. Those luxury brands are struggling and they've cut in their advertising budgets, you know, 75%. And, you know, if you buy a full page ad in GQ, that's, you know, $10,000, $20,000, and they're not paying that anymore. So I think the people who are freelancing for those companies like GQ, like Esquire, Complex, they're struggling. But some of the smaller, more independent companies that just, you know, operate under, you know, having their own advertising budgets with, you know, small companies or footwear lines like Adidas or something like that, they're still doing okay. And then, you know, with Nike and with Jordan Brand, you know, they're just massive. And they're not really losing a ton of business right now.
Yeah, one thing that Nike's been really great at, I would say, over the past like 2 to 3 years is they've pivoted a lot of their own business away from mom and pop and other brick and mortars. And they're like really efficient with their online business and selling directly to consumers these days. So, they were smart.
Yeah, they were smart and they kind of pulled away from those smaller mom and pop businesses. But, you know, those businesses that they pulled away from are struggling. So you actually have to, you know,
for sure,
think about that too. But, you know, they made themselves very self-sustaining. And the company that I'm writing for now and doing marketing for, Planoly, they're a social media startup. They help you plan content, schedule content, check your analytics, see where your growth is, your engagement rate, your impressions, and all those things. So their business is actually increasing right now. Just because.
Oh yeah, because we're in the age of like user generated content now. Like it's a must.
Right. And you know, the interesting thing is we saw a decrease in business immediately right away when some of the bigger companies started laying off people. And then after a couple of weeks, that business picked back up like 2 times over. So what we, you know, found out that was bigger brands were laying off their advertising agencies that were doing their social media for them. And so those agencies were canceling their accounts because they didn't have that work anymore. And then the brands came back and picked back up those accounts and did it themselves at a cheaper rate. So if they were paying their advertising agency, you know, $100,000, $200,000, they nixed that business and then, you know, brought it in-house with maybe one employee for, you know, a third of what they were paying that agency. So it's just, you know, people downsizing in different ways, but social media is always essential.
Yeah. It's like if you didn't pivot to social by now or you didn't take advantage of it, then like your business isn't going to survive much longer.
Yeah, it's tough.
So you're saying it's a good thing I have a LinkedIn account.
It's a great thing to have a LinkedIn
account. I mean, I don't love LinkedIn. And no, I'm not quote unquote good at it, but I know certain people that are probably going to listen to this podcast are.
Well, you know, the
LinkedIn is popping.
LinkedIn is popping.
I, you know, I hate to say it, but LinkedIn is actually kind of fun.
I mean, the other day I looked up an old coworker on LinkedIn to see what they were up to, and that was weird.
It was a bunch of pictures of their kids, and you're like, "How did this?" What?
No,
actually, I'm just kidding.
I mean, just like he was a weird dude to start with, and he was like the assistant to the CEO at this agency I worked at in another life, and I was like, "What's up with that weird dude?" So I looked him up. He lives in Mississippi now, and he's a photographer. and he shoots pictures of scantily clad women. You know, nothing X-rated, but probably pretty close. And I can only imagine how creepy those sessions are. But
like arty or what? Like Mapplethorpe or like American Apparel? Weird.
Closer to American Apparel.
Okay.
That's more of the vibe. And so I'm like, well, that's what that guy's doing with his life. Cool.
That's
on LinkedIn.
Do you think that when you get requests for people to be in your contacts, are you selective with them the way that you might be with like a different social media platform, where you won't just blindly accept everybody, or do you blindly accept people because it's really just about that number to show your connectivity?
Are we talking about LinkedIn specifically?
Yes, LinkedIn specifically.
Oh, if I haven't met them, then I won't accept.
But what if you've met them, really? But you don't have, it's not a professional relationship for you. Like, let's say you've met somebody and they happen to be in realty, but you never bought a house from them and you're not in realty.
It's like, why do you want to connect with me then?
For the number.
See, Larry, I think that's no different than having a private account on Instagram. Why would you have a private account on Instagram? It's Instagram.
I don't know.
I used to have a private account and I miss it. I liked it that way.
I don't
way.
Have a private account, so I don't know the train of thought there. I'm very public. Shout out to my haters.
But no, I think that the LinkedIn, there's an etiquette. You know, I remember talking to a friend maybe like a month or so ago, and we were just chatting and she had gotten a couple of LinkedIn requests while we were chatting, and she's like, these people aren't even in my network. Like, they don't have any like common friends or common, you know, acquaintances. And she's just like, it was gross. It was like, you know, somebody was stalking her. And it's like, it's not that serious, is it? Or is it just me? It's not that serious, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just depends. Like, I feel like, okay, say LinkedIn is very like career oriented. So if somebody is trying to connect with me on LinkedIn, I mean, if I haven't met them before, then I immediately think like, what do they want? And then if they maybe send a message that where they're like, hey, I know so-and-so that you may know, or hey, like, I really like whatever you did. Like, if there's a personal kind of like entry point, then I'm like, then I'll accept and maybe like, oh, thanks. Hey, nice to meet you. But if it's just out of the blue, like, I'm immediately questioning like, what, like, why are you connecting?
Well, sometimes, you know, LinkedIn is this weird app for the ways that it prompts you. And a thing it always wants you to do is like, hey, do you want to spam every single person you've ever sent an email to or received an email from, you know, indefinitely? And we can do it for you automatically once every 3 days. So you don't even have to look into the feature. So I think sometimes you're getting things, you're like, well, maybe you technically know this person. You just don't remember that you know them. But y'all ever get recruiters on LinkedIn who, like, you realize very quickly that the job that they are asking you to perform is like 1000% not what you have any knowledge of. Like, I get them a lot, and you know, I obviously love my job and don't want to take another one, but they're like, they want me to be a coder, or they want me to do, like, there's a lot of, you know, acronyms that I couldn't tell you what they meant if you had a,
I mean,
you know,
recruiters are like salespeople, so they're just casting a wide net, you know.
So you don't think that they think I have promise as a coder?
I mean, I know that you don't have promise as a coder.
That's true.
And that's not an insult.
No, actually, not to me, you
know,
but...
you know how I feel about devs and coders.
I know. Hey, no, yeah, no shame.
That's the one thing about LinkedIn that's weird to me is the, you know, validity and lack thereof of recruiters that reach out to you. It's like the wildest thing. Like, I mean, it's just like, this is obviously a scammer, like, or this is just someone who's like trying to like get my information. Like, what actually is this? And why did they pick me?
Yeah, LinkedIn is basically like the digital Atlanta. Scammers everywhere.
Dang.
See, I think I was taking it. Okay, well, like, you know, okay, this is a weird example anecdote, maybe we should cut this, but like,
no, I'm not cutting, we're rolling.
I know people, but do y'all remember like in the 90s, I feel like there was this sort of idea of a lot of different models and actresses were getting discovered like in malls. Like, there's this trope of like somebody approaches you in a mall and they're like, we think you've got it, here's my
card. You could be the next great pop star.
Exactly. Kind
of. Yeah.
And you know, I think that there's like a, there's a promise and a daydream in that where you're like, oh, I want to get approached in the mall. And then there's the other side of it where it's like, yo, if you get approached in the mall, there's like a 95% right. chance that you need to get out of there. Like have somebody right. pick you up at the doors of the mall. Do not watch your car. And so
no,
maybe,
but first thing, like, what are you doing in a mall anyway?
Right.
We're no, all I, about local business.
Obviously. No, I know. I'm just using that as an example. I hate the mall. I've hated the mall long since long before the concept of localer was even, you know, a glimmer in Joe's eye. But so maybe there's a reframing of the recruiter approach. So I shouldn't be like flattered and being like, oh my God, this guy thinks I should be a model. I should be like, this person is on a most wanted list and I should not respond to their LinkedIn request.
But you know, in the digital space, you know, there's a different, you know, psychological approach to that, right? Okay. So say for instance, you are looking for work and a recruiter messages you, maybe they look sketch, maybe they don't. And you're like, oh, this is interesting. Let me see what this is about because I'm looking for work. But if you're gainfully employed, you have tons of work, you have tons of freelance work, and a recruiter reaches out to you and they look kind of sketchy, you're like, oh, dang, this guy looks like he's trying to put hustle me in a certified pre-owned with low miles. Like, so it's almost kind of based on, you know, what your need is. And that's kind of how you validate what their intention is. To a degree.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I just think there's a potential to get sort of flattered by it, even if it's absolutely not something that you're interested in. Right, and then yeah. there's the potential reality, which is like, this is the opposite of flattery.
I mean, really, anyone can get catfished at any time.
Yeah, great. Good. But, that's a great reminder.
Darren, what is your favorite social media platform?
Oh, man. You know, I never had a Facebook. I never had a MySpace. Twitter was the first thing that I had and still have. But now I have Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn. So there's a lot of the social sphere that I haven't experienced. I never had a Snapchat, never had a TikTok.
That's a good thing, actually.
Well, I'm just saying that I don't, my gauge isn't really that wide. So I would probably say Twitter, just because that's where I've made the most connections.
You're a words guy.
I am a words guy. And, you know, but, I you know, I have relationships on Instagram from people that I met and made connections with on Twitter. Like, I think I met Joe through Twitter years ago.
Yeah.
What's your favorite video platform for hanging out with friends during quarantine?
Oh, House Party. Easy.
House Party. I completely agree with you.
House Party.
I've never heard of this.
House Party is the best. House Party has really good video quality. It doesn't do that annoying thing that Zoom does. Sorry, Zoom. Where it only lets one person talk at once. And so like 3/4 of what you try and say is muted to everybody else. And the only thing that's weird about House Party is it's an app. And basically people, if you like click your phone wrong, you are in the room with somebody and you did not mean to be there. And like, who knows what you look like or what you were doing. And then all of a sudden.
That's the greatest thing about it. Like if you guys are on House Party having a conversation and I log on and I see that you guys are in, I don't have to ask you to jump into your call. I can just jump in.
He can just show
that's
up.
That's wild.
It's like, yeah, it's like Google Hangouts meets chat roulette.
Yeah. So it's fun in that way to me. I guess it could be kind of problematic depending on what you're doing.
I like the spontaneity of it. But I guess if your conversation needs to be private, then like keep it to a phone call.
Well, you can lock the room. You can lock it.
Yeah.
But then I think people can still see that you've locked the room. I don't know. It's a stressful new technology.
Oh, then I can be like, Kate and Darren are locked in our room talking. And I wonder if they're talking about me.
We're probably talking about you. Right. I mean, yeah. Darren, don't we usually? Would you say that's the bulk of our conversations or about Larry?
Basically. So yeah. If you see Kate and I in a locked room, Larry, like your anxiety should be really high for a reason.
It's already really high.
It's like what Darren was saying earlier. It's the same concept as like, don't read the comments. Just don't read the, don't worry about it. Don't read the comments. Don't engage.
You're right. But I'm a Virgo. I have to know and I have to resolve things immediately.
It's just you're the second person this week who has justified a weird thing by saying, I'm a Virgo.
Dude, Virgos are like, Man, if I can spot a Virgo walking down the street.
Do you think that Virgos are the proudest of their sign of any zodiac sign?
I have no idea, but I'm just very in tune with other people like myself.
What's your sign, Darren?
I'm a Scorpio.
I think I knew that.
Yeah, because you've seen him walking down the street before. I'm an Aquarius.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I really don't know what that means.
Yeah, no. I think it's for the best.
Neither do I, but I just know a Virgo is like kindred spirit.
Fair enough.
Well, real quick before we let you go, what are your top three shoes of the last year?
Top three shoes of the last year, I will say the Sakai Nike Waffle.
Larry just did a fist pump for those who can't see him.
I absolutely adore that shoe.
Of course he did. Wow, I never really think about this. Surprisingly, I don't think about this.
What? Everybody makes a list. You don't have a list?
I don't. I'm usually the one writing the list, so I try and forget it after I write it.
Excuse me.
I'm usually spending way too much time thinking about this and writing it, so I try and like let it leave me after. What else? The Pierre Moss Reebok Experiment 3.
Fire.
And
another fist pump.
What's the third? I'm at a loss, so I'll just leave it at those two. A Nike shoe and a Reebok shoe, a woman designer and a black designer.
And then number three can just be like another colorway of the Sakai waffle. The like wave two, you know, they were a couple waves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Well, so Darren, we gotta let you get on your social run and hopefully us as well here in the next couple minutes. But before we do, where can people find you on LinkedIn, et cetera?
Yeah, what's your app on LinkedIn?
Oh my gosh. LinkedIn. I don't know. Do you have a handle on LinkedIn?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just
I like LinkedIn. I like to reshare friends' work and post my work sometimes, but I'm usually on Instagram and Twitter, and my handle is at dgriff123, because whoever is just dgriff won't ever cancel their account and just let me not have numbers on my handle like a weirdo.
I think the master plan here is like, we got to befriend somebody that works at Twitter and Instagram and like let us get the names we really want.
That's it.
Y'all, yeah. People can just want hire a hacker to do that for you for like $75. I want Kate, and there's a person who has Kate and she's not doing much with it.
Same with Larry.
I know.
I want Larry.
Yes, Darren, it's definitely a thing. It's I don't know exactly what it involves because I listened to that episode of Reply All like years ago. But if you want to find out, there's an episode of Reply All. It's called The Snapchat Thief, if I'm not mistaken, and it'll tell you everything you need to know. All right, Darren, thanks for chatting. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, you guys, too.
All right, bye. Bye.